Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
It's a podcast
about antiques
and freaks.
Today, I am going to take you on a virtual journey in your own mind.
I would prefer to be in someone else's.
Picture this. You're walking through an antique store.
Oh, this is easy.
You see a small table.
Okay.
It is super cute. Probs 19th century through early 20th century.
Oh my god.
It even has these wicked cool wrought iron legs.
Oh my god, so cute.
Very ornate. You peek underneath it to find a price tag. And that's when you see it. Like a colony of vampire bats hanging from the underside of the roof of a cave. An upside down sewing machine.
I knew it!
You are the latest victim of the cruel deception of the treadle sewing machine.
What?
How many times have we seen these adorable little tables? And yet, when we attempt to lift them, foolishly, we are chained to the earth by the anvil of the sewing machine.
Well, y'all are noobs. When I know a sewing machine when I sees one.
Oh, sure, now you know. After 15 years in the antiques industry.
It only took me 15 years to learn the difference.
You can spot the vile mimic that is the treadle sewing machine.
I know, what? It's a useful... Why are you... This is slander.
What grievous falsehood is this?
It's a good machine.
A treadle sewing table is a sewing machine built into a table and powered by a treadle with your foot.
That apparently Ken hates very much.
Basically, there's a metal barrel on the bottom that you rock back and forth, and this makes the sewing happen.
Yeah, that's cool.
This treadle looks like a wrought cast iron crossbar between the bottom of the two table legs.
Yep.
The table surface flips into a trapdoor to bring the sewing machine up into a working position.
It's very neat.
Hence the deception.
It's not.
They hide the sewing machine so they can spring it out when I least expect it.
It's just that people are, like, looking at these things going, huh, that's a very cute, deep-bellied table that has a lid. I bet there's nothing more to this.
Only the drowning anchor
God.
Of the sewing machine, ready to keelhaul you on the hull of the Industrial Revolution.
What? Well, now this is just slander.
But perhaps you are not outraged by this deception.
Oh, I think I've made that clear.
Perhaps you are intrigued.
Very much so.
Do you wish to know more?
Yes.
Great, because I have a brief history of sewing machines.
Hooray! Let's sew.
Between 1800 and 1820, the sewing machine was invented at least 5 times.
That seems excessive.
Nobody could really figure out how to get it off the ground, how to make it practical for mass production.
It's a lot of moving parts.
Until 1830, Bartholomew Thimonnier.
Oh boy.
In case you didn't fucking guess, he's French.
You know, I'd actually thought.
He is a tailor, and he invents a machine for sew.
That must have been very convenient for him.
It uses an embroidery-style chain stitch.
Okay, yeah.
And treadle power.
Sewing in a half pipe, treadle power.
Yes. Absolutely, yes.
I'm sorry. Sorry I've done this thing.
Treadle mutant sewing machines.
Teenage meanage sewing machine.
Thimonnier fills a factory with 80 machines.
Just for fun?
And scores contracts to produce uniforms for the French army.
All right.
Les amis de Abyssé, we're having a time, you know.
Jesus, you any fucking... I know how to pronounce... Well, anyway, what's Bartholomew doing now?
He's making uniforms for the French army.
Okay. Are they good?
Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
He's got all these machines. It's going great. He's got these lucrative contracts.
He's got 80 machines.
Until all the other French tailors burn his factory to the ground.
All of them?
I mean, enough to burn a sewing machine factory to the ground.
You really only need, like, one really determined French tailor for that.
Right, but this was a group of them banding together because, hey, those 80 sewing machines are taking away at least 80 of their jobs.
What, couldn't he have hired them to use the sewing machines?
No. Machines are for unskilled labor, not skilled labor.
Unmanned robots.
No, but it's, like, way cheaper to hire, like, idiot children to use the sewing machines rather than, like, French tailors.
I guess, yeah. So they burned it to the ground, huh?
Yep. Meanwhile, in 1846...
Okay.
Elias Howe, an American, by God, invents a sewing machine.
Well, bad news for him. That happened already. Oh, God, Christ, wait, are they coming for him, too?
His sewing machine is different.
They lick at his heels, the flames?
It also uses treadle power, but instead of an embroidery chain stitch, it uses two threads hooking into each other, somehow.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
Yes. Doesn't it? Doesn't it just?
I feel like I'm being attacked now.
That's twice as many threads as Thimonier's machine, and that's terrible.
Nice, nice.
What could possibly go wrong with this new, better, twice-as-thread sewing machine?
Thimonier burns it down, because he's just bitter.
Not having enough money to defend your patent.
Oh, wow, that's worse than fire in a couple of ways.
So, Mr. Howe foolishly brings his sewing machine places to try and sell it, only for people to say, nah, I don't need it. And then, like, the minute he leaves, build their own and sell it.
No, sir. You've misunderstood.
In what I am assured is a completely unrelated move, in 1851, Isaac Merritt Singer establishes I Am Singer and Company.
You sure are, buddy.
On August 12th of that year, he files patent number 8294 for his very original idea, the sewing machine.
And then several tailors burn down the patent office.
In 1854, Howe wins a patent infringement suit against Singer.
Shit, you go, Howe.
But does this stop Singer? Fuck no.
Well, no, he changes, like, a gear, and he's like, now it's different!
1855, Singer begins marketing his machines internationally and wins first prize at the Paris World's Fair.
God, that must have really stung Thimonier, huh?
Oh, yeah. And by 1860, Singer is the largest sewing machine manufacturer in the world. And they stay that way until Japan catches up in the 1950s.
Oh. Forgot about Japan there in the wings.
This is why most vintage and antique sewing machines you see are Singers.
Oh.
Because they made all of them for about 100 years.
Makes them kind of trash, though, doesn't it?
Funny you should mention
that. Oh, good face. Oh, only what I can describe is gleeful malice.
Now you may be thinking, hey, I have a vintage sewing machine.
I don't.
In my attic, just kicking around, from great-great-grandma What's-It. How much is it worth?
How much are you willing to pay me to get it out?
Nothing. It's worth nothing. Hashtag sorry, not sorry.
I'm sorry. I think they should be worth something.
But why? Why isn't my sewing machine worth anything? You fool! You lie! How could you?
Can I guess?
Sure.
Because people place an unwarranted amount of importance on the convenience of their lives, and they can't be bothered to handle something because the minute it becomes even like a moment's inconvenience, such as the weight and maintenance of an antique sewing machine, which is a fine machine and usually quite beautiful physically.
You did not finish that sentence.
Oh, I forgot how we started it, but that, basically. Is it that?
Funnily enough, no.
It's not because people are lazy.
No, actually, it's because sewing machines are worthless.
Or,
as Reddit user Catsplat puts it, quote, the vast majority of vintage sewing machines hold almost no value, for the same reason that the vast majority of vintage microwaves hold no value. At the time of production, they were basic appliances that every household needed. So they were produced in the millions and hold no rarity value.
Rarity isn't the only standard of value.
But who cares what some random Yahoo on Reddit has to say? We want a second opinion!
I do.
Enter the International Sewing Machine Collectors Society.
Yeah.
Alias ISMAX.
Ooh, that's a cool one.
And they're very helpful frequently asked questions page.
Does it include whatever happened to Thimonier?
It includes the very pertinent question, what is my sewing machine worth?
Well.
Quote, please do not seek appraisals, valuations, estimates, worth, etc. here. Long-time collectors know it's simply not possible to estimate a machine's worth without a number of criteria being met. Number one is the condition of the machine, which is possible only from a hands-on appraisal. Number two is circumstances.
Oh, was the machine orphaned? Has the machine failed to find a suitable husband?
Quote, when I do an official appraisal, I need to know whether the person needs an estimate of what the machine will bring in a local auction, or at a specialist auction, or at an ISMAX auction. Or in a local newspaper advertisement, or to another collector, or to a museum, or to a dealer, or a price for insurance purposes. These are usually pretty unrealistic.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's true all the time.
3. Location. Where you are will play a huge part in the perceived value of your machine.
Oh, I noticed the emphasis on that.
The emphasis was mine. 4. Market trends. And 5. Human frailty.
Wow, these mechs really going for it, huh?
Quote, sadly, many folk don't really want to know the value. They want confirmation that their machine is exceedingly rare and is worth a king's ransom. Tell someone that their recent yard sale find was made in its hundreds of thousands and is worth less than $100, and you invite a stream of abusive email. Believe me, this has happened many times.
I believe you. It's the internet.
6, and possibly the most important point.
Get off my webpage.
Why do you want to know?
Who wants to know? It's me, Jimmy Sewing Machines.
If you have just bought the machine, its value is obviously what you paid for it. If you want to sell it, only you know what price you would be happy to take. If you intend to keep it, the value is academic anyway.
This is the fucking saltiest valuation guide I've ever heard.
I fucking love Ismax. But that's not all. Just in case you didn't get the point yet, they also have the article, How Much Is My Sewing Machine Worth?
Oh, well.
Some highlights. Ismax members get a lot of requests from people who want to know what their sewing machine is worth. Quote, our members react in different ways. GF, who suffers the bulk of such mail, dumps the request straight into the trash.
Sometimes it's the only way to handle the business.
But member Dorothy Brumleave takes a kindlier approach.
She says, fuck off!
Quote, you've got Grandma's Singer 127, or Mom's Featherweight, or Aunt Naomi's new home treadle. And you don't want it. Your sister doesn't want it. Your daughter doesn't want it. And your daughter says, hey, that's an antique. I bet it's worth something. Something is more than nothing, and your machine probably is worth something to somebody. Somewhere. But how much? To whom? In what venue? How do you determine the monetary value of something you didn't buy, don't know how to use, and don't want to keep?
Jesus Christ.
She feels that the greatest value a vintage sewing machine has is potential sentimental value to the family of the person who formerly owned it.
That's a very polite way of saying goddamned nothing.
She also says, quote, any working sewing machine has utilitarian value to some subset of people who sew.
It's a little judgy, okay.
And, quote, a real boat anchor with little potential for restoration may still have value for its parts. And there are folks who convert parts of sewing machines into lamps and cabinets and such. They are looking for parts machines too. Got it!
No!
Got it like a fish!
God, no! Why would you do this to me, Ismax? I entrusted you!
She concedes that early machines and examples of technological advancements might actually be worth money. However, quote, on a given day, a sewing machine is worth what a particular seller can sell it for to a particular buyer in a particular venue. Value is not fixed, but fluid.
No, that makes it... Oh, this is like our diamonds episode. That makes it an investment item.
Wait, no.
Yeah, it's got no. Fluidity.
No. Quote, it's a mistake to rely on any price guide.
True.
Quote, as a rule, machines made of plastic command garage sale prices.
Well, just because they're newer, yeah.
She also has an opinion on appraisals.
Oh boy.
Callback to last week's episode on appraisals. Quote, you'd pay a fee, of course, and there's a significant risk that the fee would be more than the value of the machine.
Yeah.
Also, quote, if you discover that your machine is rare, I would strongly advise you to seek a professional in-person appraisal from someone who does not intend to buy the machine from you.
Good advice.
But if you want to figure out how much it's worth on your own, she has some tips in the form of sewing machine word problems. Welcome back to math.
I don't want... Got into antiques to get away from math.
Too bad. Problem the first. Bring it to an antiques dealer and multiply their offer by, quote, at least 2.
Okay.
Problem number 2. Find a similar machine at an antique store, note the price, ask the dealer how long the machine has been in the shop, and then, quote, have the dealer's price for every 3 months it has sat unsold.
That's good advice.
Problem number 3. Post it on, quote, the auction website.
Oh, the auction website.
for $9. Very specifically, $9.
Why?
Does it attract bids? Cool. Does it not attract bids? Congrats, your machine isn't even worth $9.
What?
Bonus tip, quote, don't misspell sewing machine.
I don't understand.
Apparently, she encounters many eBay sellers who cannot spell sewing machine.
I guess, yeah. Oh, is there, hold on, I want to guess the next word problem. If two antique sewing machines are going at 60 miles per hour on opposite tracks, when will they explode? Multiply by two.
When an errant cow is unleashed onto the tracks by an idiot boy.
Jesse, no!
Return to Cranford, official holiday movie of the podcast.
Official movie of the podcast, let's be real.
No, it's Crimson Peak.
Oh yeah, that's right. Sorry, Paris.
Problem number four, just check the sold price on eBay.
That seems like a lot better of a chance than, like, you know, selling it on eBay for $9 because you were curious when you could have used the sold section.
She also says, in general, the closer to 1851 your machine was made, the better.
In which direction?
Well, if Singer started mass producing sewing machines in 1851, there aren't many Singers that you will find before 1851. So they'll really only be in the one direction?
I 100% thought you said 1951, and I was just, like, reeling from, like, huh.
I may have. We'll have to check the tape. But for now, let me emphasize 1851.
Because I was picturing,
is
like,
the year I meant to say.
Just saying, like, oh, so if it's too closer to 1951, then it's, like, technically one from 1851 would be worth less, because it's not as close to 1951.
Nope.
And I just took that on faith.
1851 is the number I intended to say.
Okay.
Put a pin in 1851, because we're going to come back to it.
All right.
In the meantime, fuck Ismax.
What? That's rude.
What do they know? We're leapfrogging up the chain of command. We're taking this straight to the top brass. We're going to Antiques Roadshow.
Whoa, why are we going there?
To find out what our sewing machine is really, really worth.
Big guns.
From a PBS.org article diplomatically titled, Things We Commonly See at Roadshow.
Wow, yeah.
Quote, while old and well-made, vintage sewing machines are generally worth $250 or less. And most often, much less, even when they are on their original table or have their original case with original attachments. Because the sewing machine was a big investment for families in the 19th and 20th centuries, most families kept their sewing machines and passed them down to family members. And because they were prized possessions, there are still a great number of them on the market. Which is a very nice way of saying, for the love of appraisals, please stop bringing sewing machines on the roadshow.
Hey, there you have it.
Meanwhile, AntiqueTrader.com says, quote, Noel Barrett says he sees many Singer sewing machines at each roadshow event. In fact, in Green Bay, two ladies, not together, chuckled over both of them bringing toy Singers for evaluation and ending up in line together.
Huh.
However, there is one notable roadshow exception.
Well, there always is. That's what the roadshow's all about, baby.
The 1855 sewing machine patent model. Appraised at $3,000 to $5,000 at auction.
Well, it's a patent model, of course.
I see you've glommed on to one of the clues.
to who killed old man Carruthers?
Yes. As you've so deftly noted, it's a patent model, which means it's not mass-produced.
Yeah, there's like one of them.
It's the only one. The wonderful thing about Tiggers is...
they're worth $3,000 to $5,000 at auction.
Yes. You may also note that 1855 is very close to 1851.
Yes, I had noticed.
Furthermore, this particular sewing machine is gold-plated.
Holy shit, wow. Really stunting on the patent office, I see.
And shaped like a dolphin.
What? Why the fuck? I wanted to make sure nobody knew what the hell they were looking at the instant they lied to us on this important, very important invention. Oh, boy.
To quote the appraiser...
What? That's what he said. He's like, the hell? The hell am I looking at?
Quote, now, the 1850s were an amazing time for the sewing machine industry. Singer Sewing Machine Company had just patented their sewing machine in 1851. Everyone wanted to cash in on that, but they couldn't infringe on the Singer patents, so they kept trying to find different ways to do the same thing that Singer was doing, but not copy them completely.
But old man Singer never thought of making it look like a dolphin.
Exactly.
That old son of a bitch has got one hell of a surprise coming when everyone's buying my golden dolphin machine.
Few quick notes from me. Singer was already infringing on Howe's patent.
Yeah, legally.
So even. It kind of blows my mind that other people were bothering to jump through the hoops of trying to avoid infringing on Singer's patents.
So it was going to be like, oh, you stop. Wait. Thénardier's on fire again. We gotta go.
Second point. The creator of this particular patent model is
snort and crack.
One T.J.W. Robertson. Now, when I tried to look up more on this dude, I didn't find a whole lot, except for some collections of legal cases. Because it turns out T.J.W. Robertson never actually put any of his sewing machines into production, but he did do a lot of patent fraud. Up to and including straight up stealing patent papers out of the patent office and pasting his own name onto them.
What a god! What? Touched by greatness, this man.
Indeed.
Can you imagine the god? Could you imagine this? He breaks into the patent office and steals her documents and, like, sharpies his name over everything and then brings him right back.
Yeah, basically.
Amazing. You know what? I want his machine. It's a shame that he never actually put it into production.
You want his golden dolphin machine?
The golden dolphin, yes.
It's going to cost you about $3,000 to $5,000 in auction.
A steal at a higher price.
But you're saying to yourself, Antiques Roadshow? Hoomst? They're going to tell me not to bring my sewing machine to their appraisal fair?
Yeah, who they think they are.
Why not try Sotheby's?
Oh, God. Well, never mind. I'll go back to Antiques Roadshow.
Shockingly enough, Sotheby's doesn't have many sewing machines.
Yeah, I can't imagine why.
Almost as though they're worthless.
Yeah, they're too busy. You know what? Everything I was to say was just, like, way too rude for radio.
There is one notable Sotheby's listing. Oh. One notable lot.
Is it an orca whale sewing machine?
It is not. It is a Victorian walnut and cast iron sewing machine by the Britannia Sewing Machine Company circa 1860.
Oh.
Sold for about $3,000.
What made that one special?
Well, as you might have noted, 1860 is very close to 1851.
Yeah.
Walnut is a very valuable wood.
Yeah.
And this particular machine is in pristine condition.
Oh, okay. So it was just nice.
It's also a very unusual shape. It looks like a Venn diagram with three parts, and in the center is a sewing machine. It's a bit bonkers, but unique.
Why though?
I'm guessing to avoid infringing on Howe and Singer's patents.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't worry too much about infringing on Howe's, because that ship done already sailed.
It really did. But yeah, most of the other sewing machine listings I could find on Sotheby's and Christie's went for about $60.
60's money?
It's not really Sotheby's and Christie's money.
Well, no.
So we've exhausted all possible avenues of appeal. We have it on official record that sewing machines are worthless.
It's not worthless! $60 is worth!
If the old sewing machine in Grandma's attic isn't a golden ticket to an antique's fortune...
Or golden dolphin to an antique's fortune.
Why bother collecting vintage sewing machines?
Because they're beautiful, wonderful, utilitarian objects that represent a different time of life, a different means of existing, a deeper connection to a craft. Because oftentimes they're easier to maintain, easier to use, more satisfying.
Why did I bother writing down a list?
Oh. No. Whatever, what's your idea?
They look really cool.
Yeah.
They're beautiful machines.
Yes, thank you.
Point the second, they are fascinating historical objects.
Oh, okay.
That represent a fascinating point in the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah.
Number three, they're wicked cheap, so you can get started for almost nothing.
Oh, well, I didn't say that one.
Point the fourth, they're good for sewing.
Yes, they are.
Or you could just listen to Dio off.
I get real mad with it. Is this opinion where everyone's just like, oh, well, they're worthless. Antique sewing machines are stupid and shitty and pointless and I hate them. It's like, all you're doing is fostering, like, an attitude where we will no longer strive to maintain and cherish the objects that we have. because they have minimal monetary value.
They're also really heavy.
They are, and I'm not saying that, I'm just saying that, like, there's gotta be a balance stricken between repurposing and preservation, because sometimes when people go too buck wild, you just don't have anything left.
Counterpoint, the more sewing machines get repurposed, the greater the value of the remaining sewing machines.
If any of them make it.
Considering they were sold in the literal, actual, no exaggeration, millions, I think we'll be okay.
Well, okay. All right, Mr. Numbers.
Back to using sewing machines for sewing, who'd have thunk? It's a cliche, but back in the day, appliances were built to last.
It's a cliche for a reason.
These machines have lasted.
Yeah.
Very well.
They have simpler mechanisms, too.
Exactly. Which makes them much easier to learn how to repair and maintain.
Mm-hmm.
Many, if not most, vintage sewing machines can be restored to a working condition by a dedicated hobbyist.
It's true.
Ismax has a fuck ton of resources to facilitate this.
Oh, neat.
It can also be done for relatively cheap, because the sewing machines themselves are cheap, and you can buy, like, 5 busted ones and clutch them together into one working machine like Voltron.
And see, that is the best use of repurposing a machine, is to create one good whole machine.
And a quick final note on sewing with vintage machines from sewingmachinesplus.com. Quote, unlike a lot of models today who have multiple speed settings, machines back then had only one. Fast.
Nice.
And that's all I have to say on vintage sewing machines for now.
Can you tell through the course of this that I did come up and learn to sew on a treadle sewing machine? A
little bit.
One I do still own.
It's a good little workhorse.
I have replaced the belt myself 4 times.
By cannibalizing 4 other sewing machines.
Yeah.
But then you then take the ones you cannibalized and remove them from their tables and turn the tables into actually fucking useful tables?
No, but I sold them for that explicit purpose.
Hey.
You know, I dismantled them and I said, here are some things you could use. Go nuts.
There was also one dealer who recommended if you find a full and complete, like, sewing desk with, like, all little drawers and shit, to take out the drawers and sell them separately because it will be more profitable and easier than selling the entire complete set.
Yeah, I get that a lot. That is, like, empirically true, yeah. I think it's shameful, but hey, what do I know?
It's also funny.
Yeah, is it funny?
It's funny.
No.
It's funny because I'm still bitter about having to move sewing machines that I worked in the shop.
What happened to Thénardier was funny. I changed his name, like, 8 times.
You did?
Every time I repeated it. Thurngully.
Yes. Thurngully, the infamous French tailor, inventor of the sewing machine.
Do we know what happened to him after that? Did he just die?
In poverty, yeah. Christ. That happened to every sewing machine inventor except for Singer, and because Singer stole all of their work.
Singer is a vampire.
I mean, the Ismax site explicitly refers to him as a Bluebeard, but yeah.
Wow.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not done talking about vintage sewing machines. I just found enough for another 6 episodes.
Really?
So...
Oh, I'm stoked up.
Expect those down the pipeline.
Yeah, I want them.
In the meantime, sources for this episode include antiques.lovetoknow.com's article, History of Treadle Sewing Machines, and ismax.net, just the entire fucking site for the International Sewing Machine Collector Society. They have a great number of not only resources for restoring and repairing sewing machines, but also just fun articles on the social history of sewing machines. Delightful. Sotheby's.com and Christie's.com provided certain auction listings, and PBS.org has the Antiques Roadshow clip with a handy transcription.
Oh, neat.
I also have to thank archive.org for giving me a PDF of The Servant in the House, A Brief History of the Sewing Machine by Frederick L. Luton.
It's a weird title.
Because he was writing it for the Smithsonian in 1929.
Wow.
Because the Smithsonian was like, hey, the fuck's up with these? Go write a book about it.
And he was like, they're like a small non-living servant in the home.
Basically, yeah.
It was a creepy thing to say.
And as always, our perpetual source, Wikipedia.
Donate
to Wikipedia, and also archive.org. And also join Ismax.
Yeah, all of it.
All of it.
And you know what? Give us $20 too for telling you.
You can do that over at our Etsy shop at etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks, where we have a wide variety of vintage goods and t-shirts and stickers with the podcast logo on them.
It's true. I seen them.
Or if you just want to hang out, you can come on over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/antiquesfreaks, and join our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends.
Where there's always some good content from some funny people.
Where I expect to get yelled at by a lot of sewing machine collectors.
You don't have to. I covered their interests. I yelled at you for them.
And if you still want to give us money, we also have a Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks. Where you can listen to deleted scenes and join the Random Vintage Postcard of the Month Club, where we send you a random vintage postcard every month.
And not an antique sewing machine.
No, because the shipping would be prohibitive.
Yes.
And thanks to all of our Patreon supporters for helping us pay our hosting fees, keep the podcast lights on, and save up for a second microphone.
And keeping us warm through the dark times.
With all of your affections. And thank you for listening.
You especially.
Goodbye.
Bye. Ooh, fucking off the shits with that golden.